What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme. We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, femregard.com, and of course, the Geekscape Network.
Sometimes I feel like I need a vacation. Sometimes I feel
Matt, we are back. We are joined by a first-time guest on the podcast, but long-time friend. It's going to be very confusing because we're going to have three Matts up in here.
Finally.
Matt DiStefano is joining us of the band Cassettes, of the solo project Team Goldie. Weird Al fan, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
What's the opposite of fan?
A person who's aware that they exist?
Well, you know what? Let's just come right out the gate here and say that a part of why you're on this episode is because you beat me in a trivia game we were playing on Geekscape where you knew a lyric to Under the Bridge
that's true.
Did not know.
That is true. Yeah, I don't say that I don't know about the Chili Peppers or I don't know things about them. I haven't heard a lot of their music, but...
I couldn't complete this stupid lyric, "She kisses me, Wendy."
Yeah.
Right.
Who
could, really?
I mean, you know, I never thought that I really needed to know Red Hot Chili Peppers lyrics in my life. And I still kind of feel that way, but losing trivia on it did make me reconsider a lot of things.
Yeah.
So but I'm happy that all of then? That. What have you done to rectify that since then?
I'm pouring over their whole catalog. I need every lyric. Every nonsense sound Anthony Kiedis makes, I now have memorized.
So here's the thing, because I don't hate the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I don't love the Red Hot Chili Peppers either. But I definitely think that that entire band's problem is their vocalist. Like, if the Red Hot Chili Peppers just put out a bunch of instrumental albums of that rhythm section, I'd be into it. Because Flea's great. You get John on the guitar. You get Chad on the drums. It's a good time. But... this is going to be an interesting one for us to discuss, guys, because as far as I know, this is the first and one of the only times that the artist has very publicly not complained that Al did the parody. Like, Coolio was upset that there was a parody, period, that he was not aware of happening. This is one of the only times I'm aware of where the artist was just like, yeah, that parody sucks. Like,
well, yeah, the thing with that, too, what you're just talking about, Flea's complaint was, yeah, I didn't really get it. It wasn't that funny, the whole yabba dabba doo now part. I was like, have you listened to your own band and what Anthony Kiedis is doing over your bass lines? That's so spot on.
Well, so here's my thing, because he says, I have the exact quote from Flea. He says, I don't think it was very good. I enjoyed Weird Al's stuff, but I found it unimaginative. It just wasn't that great. Yabba dabba doo, like I like Weird Al and everything, but you know... everyone is hit or miss, except for me, of course.
I love that he throws that in at the end. That's great.
Which is not wrong.
But I think that what annoys me with this song, and it's a thing that I've complained about already, only three songs into this album, and I will continue to complain about, is that I think this entire Alapalooza album feels like Al is desperately, like more than any other album, is desperately trying to have a hit. And he even says, sort of says as much, was he says, I knew that there was a Flintstones movie coming out, and I figured that for once I could have a song out before the actual phenomenon. So I got to predate the movie by 7 months. I always wanted to do a tribute to the Flintstones because they're a big part of pop culture. I did a lot of research. I really immersed myself in the Flintstones, and I watched over 100 Flintstones episodes, not only because I had to refamiliarize myself with the characters, but I had to actually find the sound bites and animation from the series that I wanted to use in the song and in the music video. But what that also says to me is, it could have been anybody's song. He was going to do this Flintstone parody.
Yeah, he seemed locked into it. And it's funny because, okay, so of course, just right out the gate, this is one of Al's signature parody styles, right? Which is, I'm going to take this old piece of TV pop culture and I'm going to smash it with something new, a new current song. He's done it. I mean, this is what we've talked about Brady Bunch. We've talked about George of the Jungle, which wasn't a parody even, but just a straight version Isle of the theme thing. Song. Gilligan's Island. I mean, if you go to, like, I Can't Watch This, he references tons of shows. But he, I mean, there's like actual, or Money for Nothing, Beverly Hillbillies, is another just example of like this format has worked for him for a really long time. But as best I can tell, this is the first one where he's at least admitted that there was some actual,
like, incentive. Because the song ended up on the Flintstones soundtrack.
Yeah. he made it on the soundtrack. He did it. He accomplished the goal he wanted. But it's interesting. Like, when we talked about Brady Bunch, we talked about Beverly Hillbillies, George of the Jungle, Gilligan's Island. A thing that kept coming up was, like, why is he doing this? Because you realize that, like, those shows are so old and so out of the pop culture world at that time that it must have just been his weird, like, oh, I just want to do a song about this TV show that's been off the air for such a long time.
Even to a certain extent, I Lost on Jeopardy was released.
Sure.
When Jeopardy hadn't been a TV show for like 15 years. Jeopardy came back because of that song.
It felt like on all of those, he was pulling these weird niche, like, pop culture, like, dorky pop culture references. Like, yeah, Ricky, I Love Lucy. Thank you. Very good. You're doing a great job.
People just like talking about stuff from when they were younger. Yes. No matter how old you get, I feel like, no matter what it is, you're like, remember that thing I liked at that time? I'm thinking, this kind of is a parallel to, Matt, I know you're a big Boy Meets World fan. I don't know if you listen to their podcast, but they're talking about how the writers of that show were so obsessed with, like, Happy Days and the monkeys and all these celebrities from that time frame and would bring them on as guests on a 90s TV show geared at 10-year-olds who had absolutely no idea who they were. They were just like, hey, remember this old stuff that I liked? It's still cool, right?
Yeah, I think that continues throughout everything. Like, I remember there was one time my old roommate Shrop and I were hanging out in our apartment, and we just happened to we were flipping through the channels, and we hit Disney Channel, and Hannah Montana was on, and Gilbert Gottfried was on it. And we're like, what is Gilbert Gottfried doing on it? So we sat and we watched the whole episode, and it was not funny. But we were like, well, let's see who's the guest on the next episode, because and it was like 6 episodes in a row where every time we're like, why is this person on this show? Like, it was, like you said, someone that we knew, that there was no way that the attended audience watching Hannah Montana had any clue who this person was.
Writers, directors, casting directors who are just like, oh my God, I get to cast Gilbert Gottfried and something like, yeah, because kids will watch anything. I mean, that's the other reality of it, right? Is it's just like, they don't. No kid is going to be excited about Gilbert Gottfried, but they're also not going to be like, why is this guy on my show? Like, they don't care about that at all. It's like, why not just put all these people? Yeah. He has a funny voice. Yeah, exactly.
But there's a whole, I mean, I'm not much of a songwriter, but I know that when I did write songs, I definitely referenced shit from my childhood. I know for a fact that one of the first songs you ever did, DeStefano, was about playing bad dudes.
For sure. You know, like, one of the first songs ever, but there is a song that exists about Matt, what's the worst song parody you've ever written?
I think the worst one I ever wrote, I'm still really proud of, and I only played it 2 or 3 times, was when I did my song. It was a parody of Boom Boom Pow by the Black Eyed Peas about eating a lot of food, because I was going for a Weird Al thing. And I just remember the opening was, got a Kit Kat, got a kid.
Matt, how old were you when you wrote this? Just for the listeners.
Definitely like 20, 21, maybe even 22.
I was gonna say, Boom Boom Pow is not that old, guys.
Okay.
The other one I only played once. I can't even find the lyrics. And I don't know. It wasn't a particularly fun. It was definitely... We're coming up to Achy Breaky Song, which was one of the meaner Al parodies where he's really pissed off about a song. I definitely wrote a song that was a parody of I Love College by Asher Roth called I Hate Asher. And it was how much I hated that song.
Where is that? Insert audio.
Yeah, it was performed one time on his home turf of Westchester University at a club there, and then I never played it again. But then I checked out the rest of his music, and I actually really like Asher Roth, but I just did not like that song at all.
No, that was an easy song to hate back then, for sure.
Especially because, like, at the time, I still am a huge Weezer fan, and that was when the official version was the sampled Say It Ain't So, and, like, Rivers Cuomo was like, you know, I don't know how I feel about the fact that you took a song about my alcoholic dad and turned it into a song about how great it is to get drunk in college.
Well, then he's like, cool, we just re-recorded it with slightly different chords. So.
Problem solved. Fixed everything. Matt, why did you pick, because you were like, I want to do Bedrock Anthem. And I was like, perfect, because it's coming up.
So a couple reasons. I just went and grabbed this for your listeners who are listening. This is my cassette copy from being a child of Alapalooza. I'm not the hugest Weird Al fan in the world. I do really like Weird Al, but this was the first copy of Weird Al's music that I had. I discovered him on Off the Deep End right before this. And I think I was 10 years old. I think that's the age when you're just, you know, standard issued, whatever the most recent Weird Al album is.
Oh, yes. Pretty much, absolutely. Yes.
I don't know who bought this for me. It definitely wasn't my parents or myself. I don't know where it came from, but it was like my Weird Al album. So even though in the grand scheme of things, it's not the best one by any stretch of anyone's imagination, it was just the one that I had this connection to. Bedrock Anthem, I think, is very interesting. It has a pretty cool video. I think it's really bad, which I think it's fun to talk about things that are that you don't like sometimes. And I also think it's funny, like what you said, talking about Flea, the Yabba Dabba Doo Now, the Anthony Kiedisisms that he drops into all of his songs, I think are perfectly captured by the Flintstones. There's just a, I don't know, it just jumped out as the one that I wanted to come and talk about and complain about.
I think it's one of those things where it's so far from his best output. It's not his worst output by a mile, but it's probably his most public miss. As far as a song that he picked to be a single, I feel like it's the most uninspired song that he's really tried to push as a single, but I still find things that I like about it. We mentioned this very recently, so it is worth bringing up that this is actually the second, and I'm pretty sure the last time, that he actually parodies two songs simultaneously in a song. On Off the Deep End, he did the Plumber song, which was two Milli Vanilli songs, and now on this one, we're getting the opening to Under the Bridge, and then mostly Give It Away. And I did something that usually Milligan does for the show, which is that I watched the original music video for the Red Hot Chili Peppers and then went back to watch the Weird Al video. And he's kind of already set up on an impossible task because that's a dumb music video.
Well, it's great. And I want to get into, because there's a lot of music video stuff to talk about here. He's actually parodying three music videos in this.
Oh, yeah, because he's got the Blind Melon reference.
He's got the Blind Melon thing at the top, which I completely forgot about. It's such a weird thing to reference. It's so interesting to me. So for people who haven't seen it in a long time, at the beginning of this video, there's this little girl in a bumblebee costume dancing on stage, which is how the video for No Rain by Blind Melon starts. And in this one, that it cuts into what becomes the start of the music video for Under the Bridge, where Jim West, dressed as John Frusciante, gets on stage and pokes this girl in the eye to get her to leave the stage so that he can start the beginning of Under the Bridge. And then she tries to get back on stage and he kicks her in the head.
That's the best. That's the best.
It's the funniest part of the whole video, I think. Like, it's so surprising.
So here's, I don't think that this is directly it at all, but I think part of the reference point, if I had to, I mean, obviously the very short, simple answer is it was another very popular grunge video song at the time. And it, you know, maybe gave the opportunity similar to like the first 5 seconds of Smells Like Nirvana. You might think it's Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit until the camera finishes panning. Maybe he just wanted there to be a couple seconds of a fake out where you think that the Blind Melon video is about to play before it happens.
Yeah, maybe.
But if you wanted
really
to get
rope
like,
them in, those Blind Melon fans.
I was going to say, if you want to get a little bit more Tin Hat-y about it, I think John Frusciante in the beginning of the Under the Bridge video, which is how Jim West is dressed, kind of looks very similar to how all of the members of Blind Melon are dressed in the Blind Melon No Rain music video, specifically in comparison to the fact that most of the time Red Hot Chili Peppers is basically naked. This is like a rare time that they're dressed, and he's dressed more like a completely different band than the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
In that 20 seconds, I think you put more thought into it than anyone involved in the making of this video did.
I may have even, while Matt was talking and describing the B-girl, Googled a picture of what they look like in the video just to get like a, I think that
you're
that
like,
works.
I need a theory on this.
And the No Rain video did come first before Under the Bridge. No Rain was first.
No. Well, that it may have also been that because... Again,
it actually
we're always
came
talking
after
about
Weird Al's video.
They're actually
see
Blind Melon's parodying this video. Yeah. No, I mean that could also be it. Is that we talked about this? How like Off the Deep End and Alapalooza, everything feels a little late. Like Blood Sugar Sex Magik was an album released in 1991, and this is coming out at the end of 1993. Now, Blind Melon No Rain came out in 1993. So maybe it was also to have something
to make it
more,
a little bit more current and topical. Like, that's fair. That's fair. That makes some sense.
I mean, how often do you run into this in your deep dive of Weird Al where he's super late on stuff? Because I'm just thinking, a song comes out, he doesn't have any privileged access to music that's coming out.
No,
he
but we're talking like
successful. And these off, parodies, there's time that goes into it.
Yeah, I think it was more that like on Off the Deep End, Off the Deep End kind of threw everything out of whack because he was waiting for the next sound. So he was waiting for Nirvana. He was waiting for a band like Nirvana to give him the lead single. So like he's doing like a Milli Vanilli parody in late 91 when their career had ended in like 89. And he's doing like the Right Stuff by the New Kids on the Block, which was like their first single in like 87. Like it's not like a couple years removed. It's like the world has moved on from the sound of these bands by now. Like, and I, after
but that's
that,
also
by Bad Hair Day, I think he's more on top of it.
He tries to, but for a while here in the middle, that's why he's also latching it onto these other pop culture touchstones.
Things, yeah.
Where he's like, well, even if the song is not, like, you can take a gamble on a track, right? And maybe it'll blow up, maybe it won't. Or you wait a little while, but if the subject of the song is super current, then at least that's got something. And again, Jurassic Park is the only other parody we've talked about on this record where he was like, and that one, he's like, forget, I'm not even going to try to pick a current song. I'm going to just do the first thing I can, well, not the first
thing I didn't even know that song was a parody. I heard MacArthur Park much later in life and I was like, oh shit.
Weird it was Al's like definitely... that Brian Posehn joke about wanting to raise his kids on only Weird Al. He's like, I hope one day they're at college and they hear Beat It for the first time and they're like, wait, who fucked up this song? Someone changed the words to this. Yeah. But you know, we were talking about that when we did Jurassic Park and we were like, dude, Jurassic Park is a more normal song than what MacArthur Park is. Like, I feel like you could say the same thing with Bedrock Anthem to Give It Away Now, because I don't know what the fuck Give It Away Now is about.
No. Yeah, you know, I have to, because we sort of like breeze through the beginning here. I guess the way I'm getting the sense of it, I think I probably like this parody a little more than you two do. I don't hate it. And I actually think, if anything, it is underrated in how well it pastiches the Chili Peppers.
Yes.
Because I think the nonsense lyrics of this song are, like you just said, the Yabba Dabba Doo Now thing is so not far from something Anthony Kiedis would actually do on a Chili Peppers record. Like, it doesn't feel like that much of a stretch. And I
Or even following it up with, I don't know what it means, but I say it anyhow, could literally describe half of the Red Hot Chili Peppers lyrics.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I understand that from Flea's perspective, he heard Smells Like Nirvana and was like, oh, this is smart. Like, obviously, yeah. We said before, some of Al's parodies are really smart and clever, and other times they're just like this pop culture mashup of like, how can we take these things that shouldn't go together and put them together? And so that's clearly more of what this is, but the way he spoofs the Chili Peppers writing style, I think is really spot on. And of course, if you don't like the Chili Peppers, which I kind of don't, it's annoying in some ways, but I don't think that's Al's fault as much as it is just the nature of what this is. You know, I've gone through a lot of different phases over the year. Like, I'm a bass player, right? So of course I had a Chili Peppers phase. Of course I did. Who could not, like, being my age? And now I actually wrote this down because I thought it was a good comparison. Like, in my mind now, Chili Peppers remind me of a band like Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I think they're a great band. I think the people in the band are really good at what they do. And I think there's even some great songwriting there. But both bands have a front man that makes you embarrassed to like them.
I mean,
where you're just like, this is so hard for me to enjoy because of this guy at the front of the stage who is just like driving me crazy.
No, I agree with that assessment, because I think a lot of the time people will say like, well, I don't like Limp Bizkit, but Wes Borland's a really good guitarist. And I think that that's really unfair to how good the full rhythm section in Limp Bizkit actually is.
I swear
is.
To God, the Limp Bizkit band, drums, bass, like they are rock solid. Like, and if you actually just listen to those tracks instrumentally and hear them playing, like, it is great. Those are, and they're catchy songs. I mean, there's a reason why people still talk about Limp Bizkit to this day. And now the conversation's been become like, have you seen Fred Durst on stage with his gray hair and cowboy hat? This is the craziest thing.
I mean, I do love that they've become so self-aware.
I love that they've leaned into it. I think it's really smart. But always, and I still think it's true, is like the hardest thing about liking that band was like, that front man just seems insufferable. And Anthony Kiedis is like one of the most divisive dudes.
It's not just like, because there's bands that I like that, like the Hold Steady, for example, is a band that I really love. But I get when people are like, I don't like that band because he kind of sings and it is what it is. Yep. Someone's like, I hate that band. I'm like, cool, totally get it. I think Anthony Kiedis it's not just, I don't like how this guy sings. I think it's just everything he brings to the table just totally derails the entire band. I think if you strip him away, listening to the instrumental of Give It Away Now, I think that doesn't do anything for me either. It's
sure.
Well, I don't think like Give It Away Now is a good example of that.
Oh, no. It's a terrible example of their catalog.
Well. Yeah.
Under the Bridge is a better composed song. Yes. And of course it's been heard a million times. All of us have heard that song to death, but it's a well-written arrangement. It's a good song. And you know what? The other thing, I have to give it up to Anthony Kiedis. Like, we've said it before on this show, and it's things that Al is drawn to. Like, you got to hand it to someone. Like, there is nobody in the world, for better or worse, who sounds like Anthony Kiedis. The Chili Pepper sound is incredibly specific to them and unique, and that's hard to do as a band. It's not easy to
unique's
stand
not
alone.
Always good, Matt. Unique is not always good.
But I also think...
I absolutely agree with you. I absolutely agree. But I can understand why they are the cultural force that they are.
But I also, like, here's the thing. I would even say, going back to the Limp Bizkit comparison of the two of them, you have to give credit where credit's due. Like, Anthony Kiedis and Fred Durst are entertaining frontmen in the sense of they are absolutely fearless with what they are doing on stage during a live performance. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they're not that artist who's going to be reserved, holding onto the microphone, like really belting out songs. They're going to be the dude climbing the scaffolding and like jumping around and flailing their body on the ground and giving you something to remember. Especially like, all of us have at some point done like the local music venues, and there are a ton of bands that I distinctly remember I could not tell you a single song that they sang. I couldn't tell you a single word or note of anything, but I can tell you what the frontman was doing during their set, because it was like, you know, that dude was like choking himself with a microphone cord while like screaming into, like, there's just certain people who like their job isn't to sing well. Their job is to give you a story to take home with you at the end of the show.
It's true.
And they, you know, they do that.
Yeah. And one other point, just because I hadn't even thought about this until right now, you have to give another bit of credit to Al. This is another good example of, like, at the time he did this in 1993, I don't think the odds were very good that the Red Hot Chili Peppers were going to stand the test of time.
No.
But they did. They really did. Like, the fact that this is still...
No, in 93? In 93, because you have to think about it through this lens. They had put out three albums that nobody bought. They had a Stevie Wonder cover that made a little bit of waves, and then they had these two songs on Blood Sugar Sex Magik, and then the band was physically imploding over 4 years.
Yeah, for
sure.
And
Shante no one knew
left,
if another
like right
album was
this.
Coming out.
And
no,
so
you're right.
Yeah.
It's surprising they're all, well, that the ones that are left are still alive.
Yeah. I mean,
well, we're back to this lineup again now, this particular configuration.
It's like the third or fourth time John has quit and come back into the band.
Shante has come back again, yeah. Have you seen, because it's right around this exact time, the SNL performance that they did?
Oh, my God. It is awful.
This is another good, I would strongly recommend for
Matt,
people to watch
this.
Matt,
you have to watch it.
This is, it's unbelievable footage. So this is, and it's sad because this is a time where Frusciante was strung out really bad. He did not want to be in this band anymore. It's a really interesting history with him. And basically, the band got bigger than he even wanted. He was uncomfortable with their success. And he was like, I want to play in clubs. I don't want to play stadiums.
I don't
want to
be playing on SNL right now.
Doesn't want to play stadium arcadiums.
Exactly. So he just was uncomfortable with the whole thing. And he then was on heroin and was lashing out and doing. And they do Under the Bridge on Saturday Night Live. And of course, he starts the song with the guitar riff. And he intentionally fucks up that opening riff so bad. Like, he changes every note. He's going to different chords. And poor Anthony Kiedis has to come in. Like, he just gives him this, like, cue to come in, and he has no clue what key the song is in, the tempo. It's all absolutely insane.
And he just powers through it as if John's doing everything John's supposed to be doing at that point. The rest of the band keeps just playing the song as if he's
they are trying. I mean,
it,
they know, like, they're on TV, but like at one point Anthony Kiedis obviously like fully turns his back to Frusciante. Like, he's just, I can't even look at this guy right now. And at the end of the song, when the backing vocals come in, which are Frusciante's, the, you know, under the bridge I'm gone, like that whole thing, instead of singing any of that, Frusciante just walks up to the mic and goes, "Woo!" And like just belts this like yell into the microphone. Oh my God. You can see the death glares the band give him at the end as they're finishing the song.
That's the best vocal on the song. I didn't realize that was him.
Yeah.
All the high falsetto stuff is all Frusciante. I mean, he is, I think he is a legit genius.
What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme. We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, femregard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out weknowpodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, weknowpodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
From the Chili Peppers, but not much else. Yeah. After this very long break with this band, Dave Navarro becomes their guitarist for exactly one album. Mm-hmm. It is an album that they refuse to acknowledge exists. I don't think they play any of the songs off of it live, which I think is a true bummer because I think it's the most interesting album in their catalog. Like I think
One Hot Minute, it's called. Yeah.
It does not sound like the Red Hot Chili Peppers. There is not an album by them that sounds less like the Chili Peppers than
What's
One Hot
the
Minute.
Single from that one.
So the singles were "My Friends" and "Aeroplane."
Aeroplane is probably the most notable one.
That song blows.
But like the opening song, like the first single they put out was that song "Warped." And that song is insane. That is fully like Dave Navarro coming in and being like, hey, you guys are Jane's Addiction 2.0. Like,
we're
just going to write Jane's Addiction songs.
Yeah,
and Anthony Kiedis figure it out.
Bullied them into a record. Like, that they, I mean, it must not have been that collaborative because, again, they never touched it again, even without Frusciante. Even when Frusciante left again, they still never went back to that stuff.
The only song they play live on the entire album is a song called P, which is just Flea doing a solo song with bass and him singing. Like, it's the only thing that Dave Navarro had nothing to do with on that album that they will occasionally play. And man, I'm realizing I sound like a way bigger Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, you really do. You're pulling out these deep cuts.
I mean, I do like the Chili Peppers. I feel like they're one of those bands that I totally get the joke, and I will always laugh at the California jokes. Like, you see you see it on TikTok all the time, and it's never not funny. But I do think that there are, like, these deep cut songs that are good, and I just think, like, I get annoyed anytime any band is brought up into the worst band of all time conversation, like, because it'll be a band like Red Hot Chili Peppers, or it'll be Nickelback, or it'll be Imagine Dragons, and all I can think is none of you motherfuckers have ever heard Broken Side. Because, like, if you had heard...
I played a show with them.
There you go.
But you know what I mean? Like, if you had heard some of the stuff that was happening in, like, 2010 in the crunkcore movement, like...
It was real bad.
None of these bands come to the headache-inducing, infuriating sounds that was crunkcore.
That's a good example, though. Broken Side was very unique.
Yeah.
What are those guys up to these days?
And if they were a little bit more famous, I'm sure Al would have done a great parody of one of their songs.
They were on TRL. I remember they were on TRL like 2 days before I played a VFW with them.
That's wild.
The only thing I remember, I never liked that band, but the one thing that I had to give them credit for was I believe their major record label debut was literally called "Well, the Kids Seem to Like It."
Is that true? That's hilarious.
Like, I'm like, that's a good name for an album. Like,
I have a distinct memory of going to see the Warped Tour in like the mid 2000s, probably 2008 or 9 or something like that. And I had been out of it for a few years, and then I went back, and it was a lot of stuff like that. I just was like, wow, this has changed since I was last here. It's all this like screamo music with these dance beats in the middle, and I was like, man, this is like, I am old.
And all of that is when I was playing the most shows that I ever played.
The most.
See, there I go.
Well,
I got
you
to
were...
cross-pollinate with a lot of those MySpace artists.
You fit into that weird, the Team Goldie stuff fit into a very weird, like, could check a lot of boxes on a bill.
Some of the wrong boxes sometimes ended up playing. but that's neither here nor there. Let's get back to the Chili Peppers.
Back to Bedrock Anthem. I will say that there is one. So I'm listening to this song for the first time in a really long time, and there's, you know, I have a smirk on my face because it's a funny song. It's an early song that I liked.
Do you think it's funny though?
Well, I was gonna say there is one line in this song that I don't know why. At the age of 38, it still makes me giggle like a little schoolgirl. But the way he says, "Buddy Rumble, what a little wiener," like always kills me.
Sure.
Like it's perfect. It is the perfect line in this song.
I have a theory about comedy music. And Al is mostly the exception to this theory. But comedy music is mostly not funny and mostly not good musically.
Yes.
And I think this is good musically. I think Al, across the board, really great. Like his band is amazing. The way he recreates the sounds of existing songs and the stuff on his original songs as well, style parodies, everything, cross-board, awesome. Think most of his songs are pretty funny. I don't really think this song's funny. He's talking about how he had to research and watch all these episodes to to come up with Barney Rubble, What a Little Wiener.
Like, listen, Matt, this is not the first nor the last time that on this podcast we'll question how much research Al actually did.
Right.
Who claimed that he spent days in the New York library learning about ducks to write "I Want a New Duck." And there is not a single duck fact to be found anywhere in that song.
He basically found out they have webbed feet.
That's one of the
and came up with one down pun.
Chapter one, webbed feet.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I agree. This is reasonably basic Flintstones knowledge that probably did not need that much research.
But you know what? I understand it in the sense of I've done some like YouTube video essays before. Like I did a video essay about Daria. I didn't need to rewatch all of Daria to do that video, but I felt like, all right, if I want to speak about this in any way, I should try to watch the whole thing just to make sure that I'm not missing anything that I want to call out. And I would write down like specific episodes and specific points in the episode that I might want to pull a clip for the video. So I do agree that like in the sense of I know that I want for this backwards guitar part for there to be all of these audio clips, like, maybe it was just 100 episodes it took for him to find all of the clips that he's like, those are the ones I definitely want to have sampled in this. Like, it could have been 2 episodes if he had found them quick enough. But
Matt, how much research did you do for your Kit Kat Black Eyed Peas parody?
I ate a Kit Kat and I listened to the Black Eyed Peas song a couple times.
It is a weird, the fact that he chooses that dialogue to put in the song in the middle, it seems really arbitrary. I mean, I guess it's a good length of time, but like the line, the Fred Rubble, "Wilma, I'm home, start serving dinner and don't spare the spare ribs." And then, "Oh no, down Dino, down.
Take it easy, boy." And then,
I mean, it doesn't seem, it's not like moving the narrative forward in any sort of a major way.
I wonder if, I bet you the clip that he was trying to find the most was the last one that
the
all right, all right.
Do's that fit?
No, the like, all right, oh boy. Because,
oh, that.
Because the end, because I don't think that's a thing that happens in every episode of the Flintstones. And it fits very well with how, like, the kind of like the song Give It Away Now just kind of ends like, and that's the end of the song. Like,
yeah,
it's just
yeah.
like it's a very just like, and we're done playing.
I do like the boy. And I like the fact it does seem like it's 3 different yabba dabba doos that he throws in from at the end that are very well timed with the track. Like it does fit really nicely.
Yeah. I love that. That's probably my favorite part. The kind of like call and response of the yabba dabba doo now and the actual samples. But yeah. To your point of like, there are 3 different ones, I feel like one of them locks in way better than the others. And my brain's like, why didn't you just use that one?
Use that
times?
One over and over again.
Because it just fits so much better. But I'm not Weird Al.
Well, I want us to talk about the video a little bit real quick because this is a pretty important video in the sense of this is Al's first directorial video. Like prior to this, he did Christmas at Ground Zero. But that was just collecting stock footage and shooting the closing shot that was like 10 seconds long. And this was Al fully in a director's chair filming actual footage.
Where it's due, we did say it at Christmas at Ground Zero. At that point in time, Al going through stock footage to assemble this nuclear holocaust Christmas.
A lot of work.
It was a tremendous amount of work for him. He was like at the library going through microfiche or whatever. Like that must have been quite a process.
That's why his duck research was so limited, because he was looking for all these other videos.
Yeah, he was going through all this nuclear war footage instead. That's true.
But I like they it says here, like, for the Give It Away Now part of the video, Yankovic and his bands found what they were pretty confident was the exact spot that the Red Hot Chili Peppers used, because they were looking for landmarks from the video and driving around. So it's like they put in the time and effort for that. But I want to call out, like, some of the side by sides that they do. We talked about the B-girl. Something that I never caught was that making fun of Anthony Kiedis's tattoos. He has Pebbles and Wilma tattooed onto his arms. It's like one moment he turns and you can kind of see that it's Pebbles and Wilma on his arms, and then like the Bedrock graphic comes up and it kind of covers up his arms. But I was like, that's really funny detail.
I thought you were saying that Anthony Kiedis has
no Weird Al in the beginning of this video.
No. I saw those tattoos and I was like, wait a minute.
yeah, that was him making fun of the tattooed arms in the Under the Bridge video. But then, you know, we get, first of all, he always calls Dick Van Patten his lucky charm. He shows up very quickly in this video for no real reason.
Absolutely no reason. He's just there. Everyone's dressed up like the Chili Peppers, and he's just there too. Like, hi.
John Schwartz is dressed like a member of the Loyal Order of the Water Buffaloes, playing the drums, which is a nice little bit. But then, I mean, this, I guess, is the thing that makes this video hard for me to. When we come to where we have to rank the video, I don't know how to do it because he's not venturing too far away from what's already happening in the Red Hot Chili Peppers music video. They're just flailing
shot
in the
for
desert.
Shot. Yeah. I mean, there's some funny, like, first of all, another fun note. For some reason, this blew my mind. I don't know if you noticed, Matt, because you said you watched them both. Weird Al's video for Bedrock Anthem has been upscaled and is now available in, like, remastered 1080p. And the Chili Peppers video for Give It Away looks like shit on YouTube right now. It's like, I can't believe nobody has restored this masterpiece of music video work. I don't get it. Now, so Al's video looks so much better now.
Do we think, we're saying, like, yes, awesome recreation. I didn't go back and watch the Chili Peppers video because who has the time?
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah. But, and also it involved having to listen to the song at least one more time.
Yeah, I did watch the Weird Al video, and from my memory, I was like, this looks exactly like what I remember the Chili Peppers video looking like, which makes me think we're talking about the B-girl and maybe, you know, trying to rope people in who are flipping on the TV. At the time, this was on MTV. I remember seeing it on MTV.
Yeah this did and, well.
And do you think people were flipping through and were like, cool, Chili Peppers video, let me stop here and watch this, and then they're like, wait a second, Anthony Kiedis, he doesn't say yabba dabba do in that part of the song.
I think for a lot of Al's parodies, that was at least part of the goal, was like the trying to fool you for a moment there, because plenty of, you know, the Fat video, I guess, was a little bit easier to catch very quickly, but Eat It, like, depending on where you joined the video, or Money for Nothing, we talked about a lot, like, that video is exactly the same.
But even the Fat video, he got Jackson to give him the exact same set that they shot Bad at. Like,
it looks really close, yeah.
Like, he tries to get as close to the details as humanly possible to make it a one-for-one, and that's the thing, like, everything that I could say, well, that's really weird in this video, like, the chin face singing, I'm like, yeah, but then that's also in
Give
It Away, just not with the googly eyes on the chin.
Like, he's got the, like, Anthony Kiedis has close-up shots where he's got glitter all over his mouth, and then Al does that a whole bunch of times, but
it's
goes
like all
as
over
far
his
as like
teeth and
replacing
like
his teeth, but like at one point his teeth look like a zipper or something, and then he's got fangs, like he looks like a demon for a minute there, but still covered in like this weird glitter material. So like there's some jokes there. There's when they're jumping up in the air randomly, like a poodle flies across the screen. There's like a few, like, shout out poodle references for Al. That's another thing we have to be keeping track of.
It says that one of them is his aunt.
Like, yes. So I guess as they're all jumping in the air, it goes through all of them. And then there's a bunch of random people. And one of them is his aunt Dot. So that's good fun. A sumo wrestler, Dick Van Patten again. And then they just throw a poodle across the screen as well. Yeah. And there's also that really weird, because I kind of jumped back when I saw that crazy, like, upskirt shot.
Yeah, nope, that's in the
Al
video.
Wearing, it's like, more, a thong.
It is way more egregious in the Red Hot Chili Peppers video.
I should have known. I saw it. I saw Al do it. I was like, whoa. And then I was like, oh, of course, Anthony Kiedis did that 10 times. I only did
so many, so many times, and at one point he gropes his own balls in the video.
Yeah.
I was like, Jesus Christ, Anthony Kiedis.
No, the Chili Peppers had quite a reputation for a well-deserved for being some real wild boys.
Yeah. Matt, they wore socks on their penises, and you're surprised that he grabbed his balls in a music video. Come on.
No, he didn't. Listen, Michael Jackson grabbed his balls. This was different. He like he just like plays with them for a little bit for no reason. He gives him like a little tickle.
There was like, a reason.
For me to talk about it 20 years later, 30 years later on a podcast.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He said, yeah, one day someone's going to do a podcast about me. And they're yeah,
he's a big listener, I've heard. What's up, Keeds?
God, could you imagine if any of the Red Hot Chili Peppers just listened to the last 41 minutes of you guys, three of us just shitting?
I take nothing back.
I was pretty, I thought I was defending them pretty well. I was like, I'm not a huge fan, but I was, and I think they're a super unique band, which always means you're good, yeah. As we've established. If you're unique, you're good across the yep. board, no matter what.
Yep.
And you know what? Let's do one more thing. Well, this is more about Al than the Chili Peppers, but I have a quote that I really liked from that was written by Nathan Rabin, who we've talked okay. before about on the show, who's done a lot of Al research and wrote a book about Al. And he notes, Bedrock Anthem is sung from the point of view of someone who loves the Flintstones to the point where they desperately want to live inside this world. On a conceptual level, the comic conceit behind Bedrock Anthem isn't terribly dissimilar from that of Lonely Island's Lazy Sunday. In both songs, the intensity and masculine aggression of the delivery renders the incongruous banality of the subject matter hilarious.
Yeah.
That's some big words he uses at the end there.
I was going to say, I kind of disagree with Nathan's assessment, and I actually am glad you brought up Lonely Island because I wanted to mention them with something that Matt had said, where I think that there's this really fine line as someone who very briefly tried to do musical comedy as a thing, like... There is this super fine line of you're either a comedian who's doing music or you're a musician who's doing comedy. And I right. think that line in the sand is like a genuine love of the music that you're doing. And like Al has that. I think Lonely Island absolutely loves and respects hip hop and knows exactly what the tropes are that they're mm-hmm. they're tweaking. I think it's why Tenacious D works, is like they have such a deep love and understanding of metal music that they know how to like turn that knob just so, versus like someone who I remembered liking in college and I recently re-listened to some like Stephen Lynch stuff and it like does not hold up. Like it's like, okay, this is more just a guy with a guitar singing shocking lyrics in a lullaby voice. Like it's yeah. it's there's like that line of like, if it's about comedy, if it's about doing comedy using music, it will always end up feeling dated because both music and comedy are always ever evolving and shifting. But if it's about like having a love and appreciation for music and wanting to make fun of those tropes, you have a slightly better chance of it aging properly because people will listen to it in the context of that musical genre in general.
That makes a lot of sense. I like that. That's good. Because as we've discussed before, the thing about comedy, when you're looking back on something a decade or more later, comedy is going to change. Like,
yes.
If something that was funny will not be funny
yeah.
in the future, it just won't.
No.
But if the music is good enough, you're willing to forgive a lot and you're willing to let it, because it's still a satisfying listen. Like, a good song will override a lot of other problems.
Yeah. And like, so you've never heard any of the stuff that I've done before, Matt, and that's probably for the best. But Matt DiStefano has unfortunately had to play quite a few shows with me doing stuff.
I mean, I feel like I didn't know you did song parody. I can't believe we're just glossing over that Matt Kelly has recorded song parodies.
I did like.
I
want to
come back on an episode where. Are there any of these recorded? Can we do an episode about
only
those?
The chemistry rap? Only the Eminem chemistry
one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to like let it slide and talk to you about it after, but we need to discuss the fact.
But what I was going to say is that wasn't really like the main focus of a lot of it. And I tried when I moved.
How you're teeing this up.
Yeah, but like when I moved to L.A. very briefly, I tried to do open mics and it bombed. It never worked well. And I think hopefully DiStefano can agree with this and give me some
form
of like,
I didn't hear it, but I can agree that it probably bombed.
but I was going to say is so much of what I was doing when I was playing those shows was specifically commenting on the music scene in that area at that time. where sure. It's like, I maybe like in a, if I was actually a good musician and was able to like play, as we were talking about, like 2010 Warped Tour, it may have went over well with people that were in that very specific music scene where I'm making fun of like the way that kids were dressing at that time with like the trucker hats and the girl pants and stuff. But like your average Joe in LA at a comedy club is going to be like, what the fuck is this song about?
Right. Right.
So, I mean, that's my connection to it anyway, is that that line of like musical comedy is like, it's a very much a time or a place. And very rarely is a song that you wrote 10 years ago still going to make sense to continue playing live all these years later, because you're commenting on something so. And I found a note. I found one of the old St. Mort performances on YouTube, and I was just cringing. I'm like, this is in that video. I use a word that I wish I didn't use. And I know that Al has said that in song, he uses a word that he wished he didn't use. So
what word?
He says midget. He calls Barney Rubble a midget.
Yeah. He says, I wouldn't, if I was to write the song today, I would find a different word to use.
Yeah.
Anyway, nothing else about it.
Yeah,
otherwise, it's perfect.
Otherwise, it's a home run.
All right,
so
it.
I think we're at the ranking stage, though, Matt. And
I think we are.
I think I am actually going to put this higher than I thought I was going to put this. Originally, I was going to say, like, I think Bedrock Anthem might be the lowest ranked popular song from him for me. But I actually put it, like, it's still low, but it's kind of up there. I put it in between Another One Rides the Bus and Girls Just Want to Have Lunch. I think it's very comparable to Girls Just Want to Have Lunch, as Al kind of, I don't think his heart is in this in the same way that I don't think his heart was in Girls Just Want to Have Lunch. But I would still listen to Bedrock Anthem more than I would listen to any of the songs that I put put below it, like She Drives Like Crazy, Here's Johnny, Isle Thing, The Brady Bunch, and I Want a New Duck as examples.
So, Matt, I just what you were saying there, you're like, I feel like his heart wasn't in it. He wasn't feeling it. Can you imagine if your job was you had to, like, punch in and write parody songs all day? And you're just picturing Al, like, I have to do this to make money and survive. Whatever I got to do to keep it going. Imagine that's something you had to do and you didn't have the option to not do it.
To not do it. Well, no, but my example being, like, I feel like he felt he had to do something with the Flintstones. Like, he was like, I have to do this Flintstones thing.
Well, smart.
And with Girls Just Want to Have Lunch, literally, he thought that Dare to Be Stupid was done. And the Scotti brothers were just like, we're not releasing this unless you do a Cyndi Lauper parody. So he, like, begrudgingly writes the Cyndi Lauper. Like, I think both of these songs have the similar vibe of, like, I just need to do this, and I will do it by any means necessary.
Yeah. Phone in it in. Get
yes.
it done.
How about you, Matt? Where are you going to put this?
I'm going to rank it a little bit higher than you, which makes sense given the conversation we just had. I think I'm going to put it just below Taco Grande.
Okay.
I'm going to put it just below Taco Grande and just above Lasagna, which is... Matt's laughing at me.
Oh,
I know, this is a hilarious ranking process trying to compare these things, but... No, I actually do, you know, and we didn't even do it on this one. Sometimes we like to go like line for line with Al's parody versus the original. And I actually do think, especially like looking at it line for line, makes you appreciate again how funny some of the comparisons are with Kiedis's bizarre lyrics and phrasings, with Al talking about, you know, caveman stubble and the saber-tooth tiger, loincloth, natural fiber. Like, I really, the rhyme structure and stuff on this one, I think is really, really good. And again, does a good job at spoofing Anthony Kiedis. And yeah, I mean, it's not the, I don't think I'm ever going to think one of these. I mean, I guess as we move to like The Saga Begins is like maybe the most famous, and that's a movie still, but it's like the tie-in of like the song with the pop culture visual medium thing.
Yeah.
That's probably like the magnum opus of his in that world, I would guess. These are never like my favorite thing that Al goes to. But
I think we have a very disappointing one still a whiles away. But
probably. But this is better than some. Like, popular. I still like this more than Brady Bunch, and I still like it more than Isle Thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I put it above all of those too.
I think compared to a lot of those songs, which I always have felt just like there's no, it's just not interesting to me at all. Like, I get a kick out of it. I guess as someone who's heard enough Red Hot Chili Peppers, I get enough of a kick out of the weird delivery he does in this song. His Anthony Kiedis impression is good enough that I'm in.
I think that's fair. All right, so let's do a very quick. I feel like this is easier to rank than the song, the music video. I'm putting this kind of low, actually. I'm putting it just above my bottom. So the bottom is The Money for Nothing, Beverly Hillbillies, asterisk. I'm putting it above that, but below This Is the Life on my end.
But below This Is the Life.
I don't have a list, but it's at the bottom.
You'll have a
don't
list.
Don't worry, we're getting to you.
You're going to get to do some ranking too, Matt. Don't
I'm
you
very
worry.
Excited for your
oh, I get
rankings,
to rank something
Matt.
Too? Okay.
Yeah.
Members of the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Flea?
I'm going to... Okay, yeah, I'm gonna do something very similar to you, Matt. I'm gonna put it third from the bottom, which puts it just above Living with a Hernia.
Okay.
And I will say that I think the thing about this song even has that ranking entirely because we get to watch Jim West kick a girl in the face at the top of the video. I actually think that's the funniest moment of the whole thing. That intro, the weird Blind Melon riff at the top, is the thing that saves it. Otherwise, it would be even lower than that.
All right, and for you, Matt, you're looking at a list that is guest rankings. Anytime that a guest has come on the show, they've been able to rank their song against other songs that guests have come on to discuss. So you can put Bedrock Anthem anywhere on this list, and you can move one song where you think it's terribly misplaced. So the top of the list is Taco Grande, and the bottom of the list is Eat It. So...
Okay, so totally Eat It normal. is what we're saying is the worst song.
The worst song, according to your guests
thus far.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to put it under the polkas. I can't, in good mind, put it above the polkas. Let's put it right below Hooked on Polkas.
All right, right below Hooked on Polkas, and then cool. You can move one song anywhere on this board if you think it is too high or too low.
Why is Eat It so low? We haven't gotten to a lot of my favorite Al songs yet.
Well,
so
you'll be back for that, but you can...
I'll come back for another one. This was fun. but I do really like One More Minute. So let's move One More Minute up. Let's move it... I can't go above Smells Like Nirvana. That would be wrong. Let's put it right where you got it.
Perfect.
Nice.
All right. Well, Matt, thank you for joining us on this week's episode. And
I have, just really quick before we wrap up, this is becoming my official move where I interrupt you at the very end to say one more thing. I had a couple quick facts... I feel like maybe this is a new segment at the end of the show where I just drop random facts about the
Matt
things
facts.
We're talking about.
My really? Wife calls Matt facts when I just make stuff up when we're out somewhere where I'm like, oh, that's the building where they shot this movie or whatever. So
that's great.
Yeah, let's call it Matt
My
facts.
Move is just stopping people and being like, hey, fun fact about this thing, and then just dropping a random factoid that I had
these, in my brain. These are Matt facts. The original series of The Flintstones aired for 6 seasons from 1960 to 1966. 166 episodes. It was sort of around, but not a ton before the movie that this song wound up a part of in 1994 was the big return of the Flintstones that really brought it back for people. They had Flintstones vitamins for some reason. I couldn't quite figure out the origin. I think we all grew up with Flintstones kids vitamins. I don't know how they got that deal in place, but this really was kind of not a popular thing before this movie came back. And Al was smart to ride the wave when he did. I did not know in the original animated series, Mel Blanc does the voice of Barney. That was surprising. For people who don't know, Mel Blanc does Bugs Bunny. He's like maybe the most iconic voice cartoon actor of all time. The 1994 movie that this song is featured in was written by a guy named Steven D'Souza, who also wrote Die Hard. And then he wrote this movie, and that seemed to have been a starting point for his quick decline.
I think this movie might have put him in.
Who cast Rosie O'Donnell as Betty Rubble in this movie? I know we're wrapping up, but geez.
I'll throw one more factoid out there, actually, because I think that this is a very mediocre to bad movie, the Flintstones movie from 1994. And part of it is because I wish that the movie that they were supposed to make happened, but unfortunately John Candy passed away. It was supposed to be a John Candy, Rick Moranis joint with John Candy playing Fred and Rick Moranis playing Barney. And I mean, they just had such an infamously great chemistry together that I'm like,
totally.
That would have been such a better movie. Not that, I mean, John Goodman is fantastic as Fred Flintstone, but I wish that there was more John Candy movies in the world. I'm always really bummed
Agreed.
That
Agreed.
We didn't get enough of them. And a lot of the ones we did get aren't very good.
But the Flintstones one, that would have been the good one.
That would have been the one. And then the only other thing I have here is a question from the Ask Al forums, which I'd love to reference, where someone asked him about the wardrobes that he uses on stage for his live shows. And if anyone who saw him when he used to perform back in the day, the full costume shows, he always wore like a loincloth, like in the video for this song. And he notes, talking about those wardrobes, for a few of these specially made wardrobe pieces, we have no backups. So we use the same costumes night after night and only get them specially dry cleaned whenever we have a day or two
off. I believe that.
Believe me, there are nights when that bedrock loincloth is rank. So just a fun imagine Al on stage wearing a loincloth that he has worn
my
every
last
night
Flintstones
for a week.
1994 and, factoid is that the B-52s appear in the movie. Covering the Flintstones theme, and their name in the movie is the BC-52s.
Yeah.
Oh, the soundtrack for the Flintstones is better than the actual movie.
Yo, that soundtrack kind of ripped,
Matt,
by the way.
Before we go, though,
solid
we do
soundtrack.
Ask, hey, you're always doing music.
Yeah.
What do you got that you want to promote on our little music podcast?
Yeah, for sure. As you mentioned earlier, I play in a band called Cassettes, put out a record called Wild Heart a couple years ago that you can stream and buy on vinyl online, cassettesforever.com, streaming at the places. I also do a thing by myself that I'm doing a little bit more right now called Team Goldie. That's a fun pop, rock, hip-hop, whatever music. I am putting out a new record a little bit later this year, probably this spring, so keep an eye out for that. There's a few songs streaming right now where music streams, and teamgoldie.com, teamgoldiephl on Instagram. Come say hello to me and tell
love
me
it.
all the Chili Peppers fans, let's befriend each other.
We're not so different.
We're not
What's up, everybody? This is Brian here to tell you about our podcast, Bingetown TV. Our hosts include seven best friends with a love for all things television. We cover a range of genres with a focus on fantasy and sci-fi, but also dip our feet into drama, horror, comedy, and pretty much anything we think is good television. We use the traditional deep dive formula for new live shows that are released week to week, but our calling card is our Rooks and Vets and Pitchtown TV series. Rooks and Vets pairs two of our hosts that have seen a show with two of our hosts that have not seen a show. Pitchtown TV is when we have a special guest pitch us a show by having us watch the pilot and trying to convince us to watch the rest. If you're craving more content on some of your favorite TV shows, then you should listen to Bingetown TV.
Find us on our website at bingetowntv.com, the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, or wherever else you may find your podcast.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme. We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, femregard.com, and of course, the Geekscape Network.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.